If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This week's This Life with Dr. Bob Forrest is courtesy of Bergamot Sport, an all-natural athletic performance-enhancing and muscle recovery supplement with the usual multiple cardiovascular benefits associated with the polyphenols in the Bergamot products. Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, oh my gosh, again, it's going to be get your iPhone, hook it up to your Bluetooth, drive in rush hour traffic, and listen to This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest.
There you go. And This Life, as usual, is courtesy of Bergamot, and we've got our new support from Hydrolite, and also don't forget our friends at the National Assessment Foundation. We'll talk more about that, and also check out doctor.com. You can click through there and look at the family of podcasts that are available. And also Bergamot.com, where you can learn about the Bergamot Pro. Bergamot, of course, is that...
The thing you're on.
The thing I'm on, that product that helps with vascular health, polyphenol product that has a good effect on the metabolic syndrome, as well as on HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors and reduces the bad cholesterol. And we've done several... Oh, Bruce and I did some pods talking to the doctor.
I was here that one day.
Yeah, Dr. Bruce, if you go to This Life, to Weekly Infusion, you'll hear some more in-depth conversation about that product. Okay, now it's my privilege to welcome Sherry Gaba. Sherry, how are you?
Celebrity rehab reunion.
And Shelly is with us once again, so
Hi.
We're having our clinical team
sticking around.
Our clinical team reunion from Celebrity Rehab, exactly. And Sherry, describe your work and what you're doing now.
Oh, so many things. Got my private practice going. I'm publishing a magazine, Recovery Today magazine, which is really all for families and for addicts and alcoholics in and out of recovery to provide hope. Writing my next book, which you're going to love, Marriage and Love Addiction.
Marriage addiction?
Which is what I know all about.
Your
so
mom.
Well. Oh, no. Your well,
dad.
Her too. Me.
Oh, you?
Personal experience.
So love addiction is a feature of, marriage addiction is a subset of love addiction.
Absolutely. Wow. People, you know, needing to be, same feelings, the same emptiness, the same not being able to be alone, the same not wanting change. You know, it's all the same stuff, you know, of all addictions, right? There's really no difference. What else am I up to? Oh, and I do a summit. I do the Recovery Today series where I interview people like yourself. I'm going to have to talk to you guys about coming on my next summit where we'll interview like 27.
Yeah, I got the emails about that.
You did?
Fun.
Oh,
yeah,
good,
yeah,
Bob. Okay. So, you know, people love to just turn on the audios anytime and, you know, listen to experts in our field. What's so amazing is there's, you know, think about when we did Celebrity Rehab, how many more specialists there are today, how many experts there are that are doing what we're doing that have so much information to share.
We're a little concerned about some of them.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
We
do get a little guarded.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because the excessive medicalization and pharmacologizing everything.
And pathological.
And looking for underlying reasons for drug use in somebody that can't get out of bed yet and doesn't know what day it is. And, you know, not understanding that these things have a timing and a, you know.
So we're getting away from the structure of the 12 steps.
We're getting away from the reality of addiction. And the length
of stay.
The last time the three of us were together, we decided that the biggest problem is that the clinicians are not being trained to understand that addicts cannot be trusted. They're always lying, and they seem not to get that. Mm-hmm. They seem to want to believe.
There's a funnier way to put it.
To get that.
There's a funnier way to put it. And I always say they know not what they say.
Yeah, meaning, no matter what.
Because when you come from a therapeutic background, MFTs, psychologists get defensive when we use words like, you can't trust them, or every word out of their mouth is a lie. I just say, they know not of what they say.
I'm very attuned to what goes on with drug addicts, and I think it's comical. I think it's funny how, you know, they don't, how much they don't know what they say. Two of the things that we used to do, we used to go, Sasha and I, our chargers used to go, we'd first walk through and we'd go, why are you here? You know, it's just see where they're at, what their motivation is, that sort of thing. And inevitably, it's like, oh, I'm so sick and tired of being sick and tired. Now, you don't understand. It's so hard living like this. And I open the chart and I go, the judge sent you directly from court. Did I have anything to do with it? Oh, yeah, yeah, there's that. But yeah, I'm just sick and tired.
I'm not here for that.
I'm just sick and tired of being sick and tired. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, you're full of shit.
But think about it, Drew. That is true. They are sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Of course. Well, there's kernels of truth. But the other thing is, many, many times, because I like talking, you know, it's like psychodynamic level. I'm interested in people and their experience and stuff, and I'll get into it a little bit with the patients. And I walked out, I'll never forget, I walked out, and you used to give me shit about this all the time. And Sasha would kick the back of my chair constantly if I would do too much chatting with people that weren't ready yet. And I walked out, and I go, Bob, this woman, she realized that I had some insight to this. And Bob goes, yeah, yeah, he wants to get high. He wants drugs from you.
Yeah.
That's it.
Do you think you need to be in recovery either from codependency or addiction to be an adequate?
I don't know, because there's so many people that nowadays that work with me that don't. You know, what I suggest is they go to Al-Anon or they get therapy themselves, because a lot of people go into the helping field, particularly MFTs, to help and do good and save poor little children from bad things. You'll get destroyed in this industry if that's your intent.
Well, all I know,
you know
is
what I mean?
I worked in this field, I wrote a book, I was on the show, and not until I had a husband relapse was I really aware of
I'm so glad
disease.
You mentioned that, because I was there during that. No,
yes,
I can
you
let
were.
My,
you actually...
I can let my guard down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think you actually met him at a treatment center. Right. He was, you know, one of his revolving George. Okay. Although he is
That's,
sober.
Great.
He is sober.
Oh, great, great.
And, the, you know, the jury's out how it's all going to land. We are working on things because... But
the powerlessness
I knew nothing.
Of it is you don't feel it until you really feel,
you feel it.
It.
Yeah,
the lies, the
you just don't
how
feel
somebody
it yet.
could lose everything. Mm-hmm. House, car, wife,
everything.
Home.
And still use.
And still keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still use.
So that's what a lot of people that listen to the show are going through. They either have spouses that are doing that, or children that they're scared are gonna die, you know, and we're trying to help them understand what they can do, not what will help their addict in their life, but what they can do. And time again, they just don't like our answers.
Well,
so maybe you can present it in a better way.
What I would say, honestly, so you probably tell them go to a 12-step.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's Al-Anon.
We
had people here, and he tried to go to Al-Anon, and they were like, no, we have a better way.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to say is they're your disease, you're asleep, and you're numb, and you need to wake up. Mm-hmm. That's what they
need to do. That's what happened to you?
Oh, yeah. I was asleep. I mean, he was on painkillers. I didn't know it. And he crashed a car. Oh, well, gee, you know.
but that really is, it's really codependency all the way into love addiction.
No, I was, yes.
Yeah, all the way into love addiction.
I was definitely love addicted, codependent. Did not want to see what was in front of me.
How did you find truth with it? How did you find therapy, or how did you do it?
I got shingles. I started losing my hair. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, losing relationships.
Well, so
I
you
was
had to
isolating.
Hit bottom. You had to hit bottom.
I was sicker than the addict.
So how did you get well, and how did you become so transparent?
I did go to Al-Anon,
okay.
And that helped. I found a great sponsor, and I took up.
Let's walk
and
people
I took up
through
canoeing.
That. Let's walk people through that, because so many parents I deal with are so resistant to Al-Anon. You know, I go. And, you know
who
I
did
probably...
the interview is Mike. Remember Michael, the little guy from New Jersey? Were you in that season? He was a karate expert.
Yeah, she was. Sherry
yeah,
was
yeah, I thought you were there. The mom is now way in recovery.
I know, but I want to walk our. A lot of our audience are mothers that just they've been to Al-Anon. They don't understand it. They don't hold.
Well, they don't like
value.
It.
They don't like. I don't even think they get to the point where they're being confronted by their own codependency. They don't even know what's going on.
They don't relate
well, you
to
get
it,
excuses like, "Oh, it's just a bunch of rooms of people complaining."
That's what we heard.
Or how can they let their son be homeless?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
It's like, well, you're co-signing their death by not allowing
your son
to
You're not the one
be.
In charge. I always say that.
Right. But
like
they have
they're
their own
choosing
path.
Homelessness.
Exactly.
But the same process of change, the stages of change, the Al-Anon has to go through the same challenges as the addict. When we went to meetings, Bob drinking in the back of meetings. You know what I mean?
Keep coming back, Bob.
Like, keep coming back. You know what I mean? It's like that's why it's a process. So, yeah, you got to stick him in there anyway. You have to say, keep going until
something else
changes.
Well, I'll give them the out of going to therapy, because therapy is another
way. If you have a therapist that understands.
Yes, if you have the right therapist.
That they're not going to be, can I say,
asleep also.
Yeah.
You know, yes, you could say anything.
Well, here's the thing. I can say anything. I don't care about you.
Bob can say anything.
But you know, so here's the thing. Gloria Scott reframed my drinking in the meetings. She said, it was so sad to watch you do that. But you were going to where the solution was, right? And I felt, you know, like I really couldn't figure out why I did that. I would like get beer and go to an AA meeting.
Both Shelley and I, who know you well, it makes perfect sense. Absolutely, completely fits with who we know you to
be. But I was going to where I thought the solution was.
Yes, you wanted solution. Fuck them.
Instant gratitude.
Try to help me. Try to help me.
Right.
I dare you.
It's going to start tomorrow.
Right.
But I think a lot of people going to Al-Anon, they don't really even understand or feel comfortable in it or think it's a solution.
Yeah.
And what'll happen is they'll go for a while and then they relapse.
And they'll get shingles.
Exactly. They'll relapse and then they'll start doing the same old behavior. In other words, just like we say, there isn't change if there isn't change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to change how you're treating that addict, and you're right, it starts with you, it starts with self-care, and that's exactly where it started with me. I took up canoeing. Mm-hmm. I felt empowered.
Mm-hmm.
I got
How'd
my strength back.
How'd you find
back.
Canoeing?
Oh, it's a great story. It was through mm-hmm. a client I was working with, and she's like, you know, I don't have any money, and I never do that kind of thing where I barter, you know, mm-hmm. you just don't barter. That's just not okay. Turns out she knew about canoeing, and she took me on her boat canoeing, and that was how it happened.
And you loved it?
Loved it.
How mm-hmm. crazy is that?
Yeah, it's crazy.
You got to be open to
passion.
New things.
Yeah, finding passion.
It was just unbelievable how it happened.
And where
it changed
do you go?
My life.
Up in Malibu?
You go to Ventura.
Ventura?
Ventura Harbor.
It's like one person?
No, kayak? No. Six people in a boat.
Wow.
And it's and it's not kayaking. Don't ever call it kayaking. It's canoeing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
it's one, you know, and it's just, I think the idea of being in the water just empowered me. It just, mm-hmm. I think the water woke me up.
It was
up.
Some element for you. Mm-hmm.
That was
really
my higher
deeply,
power.
Yeah, really deeply.
Well, I don't imagine you can be on your phone on a canoe.
No.
Might fall in.
Yeah. Well, you're just gliding across the water too, right? Isn't that sort of the
yeah? You're
vibe?
Gliding, uh-huh, yeah. But you're also going up on the waves, yeah.
and you can
turn over.
Water helps me so much gain perspective.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful for that woman for introducing me, even though it was kind of a weird situation.
And then you have codependency programs for others, right?
I have some e-courses. If they go to my website at sherrygaba.com, I have a codependency e-course they can take. I have a love addiction e-course. I love providing, you know, information to the universe. I mean, not everybody's going to go to a meeting. Not everybody's going to go to a love addict meeting. Not everybody's going to. So at least it might be an opening for them. They'll go to the meeting. They'll take the course, and that might say, hey, maybe this isn't so bad. Maybe I can go to an Al-Anon meeting. Maybe I can go to a love addiction meeting.
You mentioned going to Al-Anon meetings. Do you go to any other 12-step meetings?
No.
Because there is love addiction in L.A. in Southern
California. There is. Yeah. I haven't gone to those meetings. No.
Yeah. People slowly but surely. You know, Drew, when you used to kind of come at us, what are you doing to take care of yourself?
Oh, my God.
Do that on Wednesday afternoon meetings.
Yes, because we were always in battle together.
So do you know that I tried to do that at Aloe? There's laws against that.
Against what?
Against kind of, you can't tell a staff member they have to go to 12-step meetings.
No, I can't require you to.
Oh, okay. Well, how did you do it? Because I obviously didn't do it right.
I said what I would say was...
You're not Drew.
I ended up getting sued.
I would have buried...
No.
Yeah, because I insisted that you have to be in therapy yourself or doing some...
Yeah, I
self care.
That
no, I insisted.
You well,
you can suggest
that's
that,
the Bob Forrest thing.
Synthetic. Synthetic.
So how did
I would
you present?
Have I would have Barry tell his story about how he came to working in the field and how much work he had to do before he could even begin to be around addicts, then I will say, because they deplete you, and I'll often tell you the stories of all the people who have relapsed or taken off with patients and
staff members,
unbelievable stuff.
Unbelievable.
Because they don't do
anything.
They don't take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. We all need to be, I will say, we all need to be doing something and taking care of ourselves.
Yes.
I had a therapist. Remember how long I was in therapy? It was like
a century and a half. Being a clinical supervisor and a program director, the staff meetings that always bring in. What about compassion fatigue? What do you know about vicarious trauma? What do you know about burnout?
Yeah.
What
and,
do you know
and
about
at least
this?
Advocate, you know, are you getting enough sleep? Mm-hmm. Are you taking enough time off work? Are you, you know, exercising?
And I see it in the staff all the time.
And it's particularly evocative for recovering addicts around addicts.
Absolutely.
And I don't even know quite what that really is. Because I don't experience it myself. I have I have enough evocation such as it is.
But I think the stages of recovery, when you are being confronted with yourself all the time and the disease, and you're just basically dealing with people who are mostly in the delusional system. It's very hard to have a sane mind when you're constantly being told that the sky is purple and you don't know what you're talking about. And it's hard to maintain your own grounding.
You also need peer support. Which,
lots of peer support, absolutely.
You know, that we had
that was amongst us. Yeah, it was the magic.
Like, you're not crazy. You're okay.
Team.
We
had such understanding that we shared. You know, every member of the team.
You guys
had
such a bond.
But it was, there was like six or seven of us, and we all saw everything exactly the same way. So if somebody would come and start their splitting nonsense. Shelly's such a bitch. She's so mean to me. She told me to go to hell. She told me to jump off a bridge or something.
It
I'm like, no, Shelly did not
it
say
does,
that.
It does.
Shelly told you to go to group and stop med seeking and get your ass in the chair.
But you do realize there are some treatment centers where the client, I've had those experiences where the clients are right.
Yes, absolutely.
You're not right.
Absolutely.
And then
that's the catastrophe.
And that I've experienced that firsthand.
But time and time again, mm-hmm. I would tell, because I'm the one the clients would come to tell that to, and I would say, that's just Shelly. She loves you. She treats me the same way. Watch. That's just the way she is. She loves you. She's right. But we would stand by each other.
Counter-transference. I mean, you know, of course they don't like what I'm saying.
When you have a private practice, you don't have that support, really.
Oh, I know. That's why
I don't see patients
in my practice. I have to have a team. I can't do it otherwise.
Right.
We have to take a little break. Be right back. Well, this week's This Life is brought to you courtesy of a new friend, Lucinia Health, and they are addressing the rising cost of prescription drugs. It's something that gets to me, not only as a physician, but also as worried about my patients, my family, myself. Even with decent insurance, the price of medication has become a concern. Now, here's a way you can get help. Go to your cell phone right now and text this number, 22822. Then type in this message. You know, in the message space where you normally type in your text message, just type in the word Drew, my name, Deary W, and send it. 22822, send to it right now. You'll be happy you did. You'll immediately get an introduction from RefillWise with a prescription saving card that comes right on your phone almost immediately. It happens. I've got one. I did it, and it happened with a blink. Right now, it's free. There's no sign-up process or wait time. You just type that number in, 22822, and type the code Drew in, send it, and you'll immediately receive that RefillWise prescription saving card. And you just show it to your pharmacist when you go to get your medication refill, and you can see how much you save. Whether you have insurance or not, you show it to them, and they'll give you the insurance, if that's what is the least cost, or the savings from the Lucinia card. RefillWise, it works with major pharmaceutical companies to establish discounts on the cash price of over 6,000 commonly prescribed medication. More than 1 million people are using the card. The average saving is 40%, some up to 80%. So if you have medication that's covered by insurance, check with RefillWise pricing at your pharmacy. Even if you have insurance, the RefillWise discount might actually be better. So always pay to check it out. I'm also very excited to say that for every new user, that's right, when you go text my name through that 22822, RefillWise will immediately donate $1 to the Prostate Cancer Foundation. This is a charity I'm involved with. Check them out at pcf.org. They fund creative research for cancer, particularly prostate cancer, but all kinds of cancers get benefit from the unbelievably creative research they're funding. To learn more about RefillWise and to see if your medication could be covered, visit RefillWise, W-I-S-E, RefillWise.com. But to start saving right now, just text Drew, D-R-W, to the number 22822. Message and data rates may apply. Now, a couple of months ago, I was in my medical office, and I noticed some samples of a rehydration solution called Hydrolite. Just so happens I was about to undergo a colonoscopy, a routine medical procedure, and I was going to get dehydrated if I didn't be careful. And I thought, well, this stuff will be perfect. It's exactly what I need. I was absolutely impressed. The results were precisely what I was looking for. And not only did that rehydration solution get me through the procedure without becoming dehydrated, they have another product, these fizzy tablets that give you the same rehydration solution just in a little portable tablet. You just obviously add it to water. And that was something I always wanted to invent. I did not understand why we did not have an oral solution that you could hold in your pocket in the form of a tablet that would help us, say you had some vomiting or some other GI distress. It seemed perfectly sensible to me that you could put a little fizzy tablet in and have the rehydrating solution right there in your hand. And they created this. That's why I'm excited about Hydrolite, and we're welcoming them to the family. It's rapid, effective recovery from dehydration, requires proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water. So if you're sick, you've been vomiting, or maybe heavy perspiration, even from exercise, water does not cut it. You need what's called fluid. Sports drinks are far less effective and are not balanced for the rehydration, for maintaining your body volume. Simply, Hydrolite's formulation is based on established science. It is the best rehydration product I've seen or tried. They dominate in other countries, and they're no doubt going to dominate here. You won't need IVs if you're tolerating orals. You can use Hydrolite. Comes in flavors, orange, berry, lemonade, available, as I said, in that pre-mixed drink or a powder or the effervescence tablets that I was mentioning before. Simply drop it into a glass or a bottle of water and boom. Compared to sports drinks, Hydrolite delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. That's what you need. You need volume quickly. Hydrolite solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. You can find Hydrolite at Rite Aid or online at Amazon. And for more information, visit Hydrolite.com. That is H-Y-D-R-A-L-Y-T-E, Hydrolite.com.
We have the Hydrolite pills. I want to take one right
now.
Oh,
I will get one for you. I know where they are. Oh, 100%. Okay. What flavor would you like? They have raspberry and orange. They're amazing. They're in the closet down in the pantry by the Tylenol.
Hey, that gives us a point that we tend to not say. What? We're in your house. That's what's so great about life. You do your podcasting out of your house. Yeah. And none of us had been here before because there was like 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds and 14-year-olds, three at a time running rampant around in this very room, right?
Oh, this is their end.
This was the kids' room.
Well, that's why it's known as the playroom. That's why it's called Playroom Podcast. This is the playroom.
It's the playroom.
What went on in this room over the decade?
Well,
there they are.
Yeah, there they are up there. A lot of video games, Bob. A lot of
video.
That,
Minecraft? A lot of Minecraft on this TV?
No.
Was Minecraft around then?
Call of Duty.
Call of Duty.
A lot of what's the space one? Help me! Come on! Come on!
Which one?
It's got one name.
I had a girl, so I shouldn't. That's kind of sexist. But she didn't play those games.
Are they? But you must deal with parents that call you with 13-year-old that's addicted to video games, right?
Oh, you think there is such a thing?
What?
Oh yeah.
They're addictive. Period.
No, listen.
Oh yeah.
They're not meant to be not addictive.
Yes, they're sticky.
They're designed. 100%.
With the kids that really can't stop and don't go to the bathroom and don't come out for days at a time and stuff.
If parents are allowing it, Elvis is that way. You know what I do? I pull the cord out of the Wi-Fi. It's over.
But
we're done now.
He's young.
We're going outside.
When a 16-year-old is doing that, there's usually a real underlying psychiatric problem. Yes, almost always. When it really they may need some separate treatment for the video game addiction. I understand that, but every case I've ever seen, there's also a severe depression or a schizoaffective something.
You're talking
but
about don't if, the, you think if they're addicted.
Addicted.
But
to don't
what about Asperger's?
Sometimes it's that spectrum stuff
in
there
I
too.
Think so
what
too.
About? But most parents, you talk to any parents, and I know all the Elvis's friends, and you know I can assess pretty much. Everybody's reporting that my kid's addicted to video games as soon as they get introduced to them.
Compulsive, yeah.
I think it's the parents. There's two things going on that I've experienced this week that I wanted to talk to you about. The parents are just scared of the repercussions of disconnecting the Wi-Fi.
But you like
right?
that.
I love it.
You love it.
And then the second thing, Drew, I got something for you. Oh, here's
so
it
again,
is.
You're talking about enabling again.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, but fear of your children. So here's the new thing about immunization, Drew, that I think we've never thought about. Uh-oh. The anti-immunization thing.
Yeah, tell me.
Because Sid got her 4 shots yesterday, right? screaming, crying.
Yeah.
Parents, Drew, I believe part of the anti-immunization thing is their intolerance of their six-month-old screaming and crying. They're, do you believe that?
Well, I certainly know they cannot tolerate their child having any discomfort.
Right. I was like, you're going to be right. Get her in the car. Yeah. Come on. She's going to pass out from the dope in a minute.
And, you know, what do they say? Little problems with little kids and then bigger problems with big kids. And it's suddenly they want you to buy them a house, which is what I'm dealing with.
Oh, my.
Oh, you're okay.
Want to help them?
Help them, but help them above and beyond what I believe is sensible and reasonable.
Entitlement.
Yeah. Your...
Without going into too many of the details. You
know, no, but I've gone through that too.
I'm watching myself go feeling that guilty. They're uncomfortable. I don't want them to be uncomfortable, but I need to be the sound of reason here. I need to make the right decision.
Yeah.
I need to, you know, protect these assets. And it's...
Didn't our parents help us, though? There's a weird thing. Like... Yeah. Multi-generationally, parents help their kids get started in life, get them their first home. My dad did it with all three of my sisters.
Within reason.
Yeah, somehow. Well, what do you, describe more, because I think a lot of parents are going through that.
I'm just laughing that we're going from vaccine to buying houses.
That's it's all the same thing. It's all chicken shit parenting is what I call it. So we all need to come to some fundamental agreement about this.
Well, what we're dealing with is a generation of some. I have an amazing daughter. She's amazing. She's successful. She makes a lot of money. But she can't quite get into that house.
The house she wants.
She wants. That's what I mean. Mm. She wants. In other words,
they don't know how to do the starter and then
move up.
And then move up from there.
Exactly.
Yeah, they want.
Drew, I defer to you about this.
Yeah, thank you, Drew.
I think you're all thinking about it the right way, but it's a hard navigation.
It's hard.
Yeah.
But don't tell parents, because there's that tough love movement out there. You don't help your kids get their starter home.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying reasonable.
You know what I'm saying? There's the far right, let's call it, that your kids are cut off, they're dead to you, that tough love crap, right?
That's pretty far right.
No.
Dead to you.
Trust me, I deal with them. I deal with them. They're so angry at their children.
Right.
They don't say dead to me, but...
But they're angry,
and then
period.
There's the buy them anything, do anything best friend, and what needs to start happening is the people in the middle that are using logical parenting tools from their parents...
Yeah.
Need to speak up.
This is
because the only ones that talk are the crazy tough love people and the braggart. Oh, you know, my kid's the greatest thing ever.
And I speak up plenty.
Nobody bought me a house, but they did let me rent from them at a pretty good rate.
The savings, you know, we help with savings. We put together, you know,
not a lease to buy or nothing like that. You did it all yourself.
Yeah,
but they own the property and you rent it.
I did that for a
really
while.
Cheap.
And there was a nice property.
You know, you want to build equity. You want to build credit.
But I had to have a roommate and I had to, you know, figure it out.
But when you bought your first house, you bought your first house.
Oh, period. And they were furious that I didn't involve them.
And
in
could
the
they have helped?
It was so weird.
But Drew, I mean, not that it's any of my business, but could they have helped you?
Oh, of course.
Of course.
So what did they say was the reason? Or you would never have thought to ask?
I didn't know. Yeah, I wouldn't.
You just
wouldn't allow it.
You would never ask?
Oh, you wouldn't allow
it.
Yeah. In other words, in your brain, it was like that wasn't okay to ask?
I wanted to tunnel away from everything as fast as I could. Although the allure, and when I did... rent from them, the place was nice, and I fell for that. I shouldn't have done that even.
That was my mistake.
She didn't want them to own you.
I didn't want them to have any part of control over me. Yeah.
Now, my dad built me a house from the ground up. So I have a custom home. However, I did wait until I was about 45 to move into a home. Okay, so I mean, I couldn't have afforded the home I'm in, but my dad also, we have a construction family. We got a really good deal. I worked really hard on building that house along with everybody
else.
See,
I believe families should share those things.
And
why
we
not?
Built it together.
I mean, if a kid
and
doesn't
we all
want
worked
it, like
really,
me,
really
one
hard.
Thing. But I think it should be. I would like to hear a story.
I mean,
like
it was the hardest thing we ever did as a family. Mm-hmm. But it was so special, and it's still so special. You know, that we were able to do that. Now, I pay the money back, but it was so special to be able to build something with my father and my cousins and me to go to the city and learn how to navigate building a house. I mean, it was nothing I would have chose to do, but I looked for houses for 11 years and I couldn't afford them.
Right.
Right. And he wasn't going to buy a dilapidated house. He wasn't going to spend too much money per square foot. And he wasn't going to buy me a dollhouse, you know, for $500,000.
So this was a solution.
So it was a solution, but it took me to, I was 45 years old to get to own, you know, to live in a house. I lived in apartments before then, you know.
Los Angeles is a fucking mess.
So I really appreciate
the ghetto of the valley to get your starter home. That's what I did.
Yeah, like moving, you know, I live.
With Chris Bohm.
I live in Cypress Park. Which is not a great area yet.
So the question I think we're talking about is where do we get away from black and white and something in the middle? Like, right. I'm thinking of DBT, like logical, emotional, wise mind, you know, DBT.
Yes, yeah. Way too much black and white thinking right now. Way too much.
Right?
In all things.
Same with the right and the left.
Yep.
But I guarantee you, if I was not doing my part and I wasn't working as hard as I've worked and I wasn't working 6 days a week, he would not have been inspired to work that hard too.
And truthfully, I was there. You were working at Los Encinas when it began.
Yeah.
At a couple of points, you were like, fuck this.
I know. It was so hard. It was so hard.
You know
it
what I mean?
It was so hard, but it
took
was so
years
worth
to
it.
Do. Drew, it's in the city of Los Angeles to get the zoning clearance. Remember the electrical pole?
Yes, yes. I mean, it was crazy. It was a crazy idea. It was a crazy idea.
I remember
idea.
You going through that.
It was a nightmare. Yeah. It took so long, but I am the happiest homeowner, the most grateful homeowner, the most gracious daughter.
And it probably happened at the exact time that it should have happened in your life, right, Shelly?
Yes, because I was mature enough
ready
to
for
handle
it.
Yeah. All of the stuff, like the insurance and the property taxes and the, you know, the maintenance and the work. Right. It's work to own a home. Work.
No, supposedly you just put some money up and then you become a millionaire.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? That's how a lot of people are looking at homes.
I don't want to be a millionaire. You pay too many taxes.
Well, so not, did you not have- now. Not now, baby.
Okay.
So did you have this with a son? With a home?
Yeah, I was. I'm going to help him whenever he does kind of find a spot that he wants to do. But he was being logical. He went to Detroit, like where you can buy a
That's
house.
That's logical.
For like, you can buy a beautiful home for like $40,000. Well.
What do you mean, well?
That's better for you.
Then he went to Baltimore.
Oh, that's a great move. From Detroit to Baltimore.
That's where you can afford to buy a home in America if you're a hardworking construction type.
You don't have to go that far, Bobby.
Yeah, you cannot live in Southern California.
You
California.
You had an email that just came in. You wanted me to read
Maybe
it.
Arizona.
It's not in here. It's not in this
You got
batch.
It. Yeah, he
no,
should gave
not.
It to you.
Nope, it's not in here.
Okay, right, let's take a break and we'll get back to some letters.
You know, I'm always happy to talk to you about our friends at Bergamot. They're the makers of a variety of supplements that use the extract from the bergamot citrus fruit, those polyphenols. That fruit is in Italy. These supplements act as a natural statin that may improve a number of cardiovascular conditions, as well as symptoms of the metabolic syndrome, which includes high blood pressure, high cholesterol, high blood sugar. As you know, I've been excited about the natural treatment since I first heard about it. I'm getting behind it. The science behind it is sound, and physicians throughout the world and cardiologists are actually using it. Now, the makers that brought you the formulation Bergamet NA, Bergamet Pro Plus, now bringing you Bergamet Sport. It provides all the same cardiovascular benefits, but has additional additives designed to aid athletes and those with a very, very active lifestyle. Bergamet Sport may help improve stamina and reduce recovery time and reduce muscle inflammation. Now, I've been taking Bergamet myself, and I suggest you talk to your physician to see if Bergamet Sport is right for you. And for a limited time, our listeners can save 10% on their order by entering the code Dr. Drew, DRDREW, at checkout. Again, that is DRDREW, all one word, at checkout, and you save 10% on your order of Bergamet. To order the Bergamet Sport for yourself, visit bergamet.com, Bergamet N-A, Bergamet, BERGAMET.com, or click on the Bergamet banner on drdrew.com.
Okay, Drew, we're back. Going to start taking some emails.
Yeah, I'll do some letters. Then I'm going to explain my hydrolyte stuff to you in a second. Here is from Michaela. Do you help people who suffer from severe depression, anxiety disorder, PTSD because of childhood sexual abuse?
Always.
Yeah, always.
Every client we have.
That's pretty much right.
No, it's more like 70%.
Fair enough. That meet all those criteria.
Yes.
I don't mean to bother anyone, but my husband left me after 31 years together
oh
because
my
of
God.
All my issues. Depression, anxiety disorder has destroyed our marriage. So you have to wonder if there was anything above and beyond depression, anxiety.
It's her depression.
Her anxiety. She was sexually abused, yeah. Mm. And the sexual abuse piece, you know, you hear that and you think, well, there could have been sexual problems. There could have been personality issues.
Of course. So she's asking why he left? Or
well, she wants help. And she wants help. The fact that she's not had help to me is stunning. That's unbelievable.
That's quite some time to be in a marriage and not have help
right.
with those symptoms.
It's also refreshing to want help after 31 years
of marriage. Well, I can't believe she hasn't had help if she's been anxious because and depressed people, and had a trauma history.
You know, what's awful is that the trauma help out there isn't always the help they need.
Yes.
They end up getting talk therapy, and you and I both know it's more somatic. They need things like EMDR or somatic experiencing or even tapping. I do some tapping.
Because trauma is so embedded, so deep in the body.
They think because they've talked about it, they've gotten help, but they actually have not discharged that energy from that trauma. And that's probably really what she's needing.
Absolutely.
100%.
She can't be in her body.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And see, we've got to be better as clinicians of presenting those ideas as not sounding kooky.
Too pathological.
Yeah, yeah. The public, because I always say, you know, the simpler way to say it is you need to learn how to center your body through meditation is probably the easiest way. And then hopefully leads to some sort of therapist that really understands that body component.
That's a great way, or just talk about the fight-flight response, that when you have some kind of trauma in your life, you weren't able to fight, you weren't able to flee, so you froze. So all the energy stayed in your body, and so when you're acting out later on in life, whatever that is, depression, anxiety, pot drinking, that's energy coming out inappropriately.
What is the therapy we did with Simone? What's it called? Remember, we did it on the podcast.
Yeah. NLP.
NLP. Yeah. I just heard that part.
Yeah.
NLP.
I like that.
She's trying to make me do it, but I can't do it. See, I'm so guarded.
Let yourself go, Shelly.
I can't do the EMDR. I can't do the...
What do you mean you're guarded?
I just can't let
She's
go.
She's cynical like, about
I,
it,
so
for one thing.
I'm so cynical about everything.
Oh, you don't believe in
it. I do believe that it works. I just can't do it. I get really frustrated.
You think it won't work for you.
I just get really frustrated. I just want to leave.
Why don't you just start simply by reading a book about it? So you can have an understanding, because maybe you just don't want to dive into it.
Yeah,
Drew is a little cynical.
I was going to say, I want to float.
The way, I don't.
I just want to try anything.
I'm not suggesting floating, but I'm just saying maybe just get educated on how it works.
Well, I know how it works. I'm really educated. I like the dynamics of it. It sounds great. I love EMDR. I send people the EMDR. Just
that's
myself?
An American phenomenon.
Myself?
What Shelley's describing is what most people in America believe about it, Drew. Well, how do we that they want to believe in it, they kind of understand it, they know it works for other people, but that's all bullshit.
Yeah.
You know why? Because I think, and I'm not saying this is your case, but people they'd rather get in the narrative. They just
yes,
like the way
absolutely.
Our world is, right? They want to get into the story. They don't want to, you know, for me to say to you, now you just need to sit here, feel the couch, feel your back on the couch. It's like, forget that.
Yeah.
And then my eyes roll out of my head.
That's not stimulating enough.
No, especially addict alcoholic, if we're going back to that subject, they have the least ability to be present and to be in the moment.
So this woman's
so
reaching
slow.
Out to
and
us.
And it's so slow. That's just, I want it now. I want it now.
She's reaching out.
She needs to go get treatment. I mean, assessment and treatment.
Assessment for sure. Yeah. And then DBT, CBT, EMDR.
Yeah.
And somatic experiencing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not just a pill. A pill's not going to fix it.
Right.
Not by itself.
And not just talk therapy.
Okay.
No, I spent years, and it did work in a lot of ways. But the brain injury and the fight or flight... The PTSD, it does not ever completely
it
go
doesn't address
away.
It.
Well, that's true that it doesn't. Even with good treatment,
really?
You're still prone to
so
it.
So I'm
stuff.
As far as I've gone.
No, I don't know.
I'm
you're
as good
still
as I'm
prone
get.
To it. Hey, you said you wanted the Hydrolite.
I do want some.
All right.
Okay, so Drew,
you said you want
can
some
I take that home?
Yes, this is. I'm messing with the Hydrolite now. These are the fizzy tablets. There's like a dozen of them.
Oh,
here.
It's like Airborne.
No, but you put them in. Yeah, you put them in water. They fizz.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if that fizzes or not. That's just the powder.
This is powder, right?
This is a different flavor. It's berry. The berry is good.
Oh, it's very much like Airborne or something.
And then they have pre-mixed bottles of stuff, you know, too. So
and it'll just
what's
keep
it
me
for?
From. Well, you want to know why?
Prevent dehydration.
Nicotine gum dehydrates you.
Oh,
That's why I'm interested.
Oh.
I'm trying to cover up my addiction.
One glass. No.
I can't
one glass
you're
of
still
that.
Chewing that
one,
gum.
One of right. these will He's bring you right back.
Quit smoking?
Yeah. No.
No, I just been on the gum for 12 years.
You know that.
Just an addict.
Bob, when did you start smoking? What age? Funny.
I didn't start till I was 30.
Oh, cigarettes?
Yeah. I told you the story. Oof. I was against cigarettes because both my parents smoked. They smoked at the dinner table. Right. I used to have to wash the window behind my mom's chair, the soot off of it. And
yellow.
So I said I never smoke. And then I'm dope sick one day on the tour bus, and Pete said to me, you know, Bobby, if you have a cigarette, you might feel better. And I was like, get me
and
a cigarette.
And that was it. You couldn't
I did feel
now.
Better. That's
and
the
I
fucking
did.
Crazy thing about it.
I know, and now
it.
You're on the gum for 12
here's
years.
Here's a cigarette question from Jim. Are addicts who smoke cigarettes more likely to relapse than addicts who
no,
don't smoke cigarettes?
I don't think so, but you think so.
Yes.
You think they are?
I do.
I've never seen data that says that.
No.
But what's the new data you were telling me about the other day, that they should stop while in treatment?
Yes,
there's new evidence.
No, not new evidence, just that it doesn't. And we used to think it maybe adversely affected, or that it wasn't important to deal at the time. But now it's clear that, you know, this is a dangerous chemical.
Well, product. I smoked for many years into sobriety, and when I finally quit smoking Marlboro Reds, my head, the chatter and the negative aspects of my head turned down at least 5 points.
Oh, really?
When you smoked?
No, when I stopped smoking.
When you stopped.
Now, mind you, she was at 130. We turned down 5. Okay. It's Shelly we're talking
so
about.
I have a question. How about sugar, Drew? Should we stop sugar, too?
Some people advocate. What's left?
What's left?
Meditation.
Meditation, EMDR. Spirituality.
So, Shelly, speaking of what's up, so you're a love addict, self-described.
Maybe I'm being too harsh. Maybe I'm a codependent.
Where do you think that came
love
from?
Addict, slash, oh gosh.
You want to fix your partners?
I just have, I want to fix my partners, and then there is some sort of emptiness when I'm not in relationship. Basically, it's the it's the disease of lack of needing connection. I was preemie. I was in an incubator for 3 months. Nobody touched me for 3 months. Are friends. Oh my God, Susan, we're going to talk about that. I'd love to know.
She's not really aware of how that's operating with her, but one of her therapists picked that up once.
Okay, well, basically, think about being in an incubator. You're being fed through your feet, no attachment. You know what we know about bonding. Yeah. And all my life, I would feel like, even if they weren't in the room, it would feel like I'm empty or I'm abandoned. God, this is so transparent. It makes me a little emotional because it was once I put a word on it. Oh, this is PTSD. This is trauma. Mm-hmm. That's why I've made all these mistakes. Mm-hmm. Why I've been married multiple times. Mm-hmm. Why I can't keep a relationship going. I mean, that's
the love addiction, though. I think for you operates more at a level of denial. Because you don't want to have to, you idealize, which is part of codependency and love addiction.
Right,
you idealize, and you won't see through the idealization because that threatens the staying.
Let me just put in these words.
Okay.
My inability to deal with the truth is more painful than being alone. I mean, being alone is more painful than dealing with the truth.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that kind of what you're saying?
But to help clinical people, how I've always saw it, is codependency is the primary urge is to fix others. So I don't feel the way I'm feeling.
Wait, no.
That's a piece of it.
It's a little more complicated than that because you actually taught me something. You said, we were in a group one day and you went, you know, some people, they look inward before they ever get out, before they look out into the world. They're feeling what's going on in themselves. And I thought to myself, do exactly the opposite. I do exactly the opposite. I experience
out.
You and that lets me experience myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a fundamental difference. There's sort of two kinds of people in the world. People that go in and then out. People that go out and then in.
About love addiction? So explain love addiction.
Codependents all go out and then in.
Yes.
So the very self is experienced through others. And if you don't have good boundaries and you haven't had therapy, pain in the other activates
That's what
pain.
I'm saying. It's codependency.
Activates your pain. So you think it's the other person's pain, but it's really my pain.
Well, it's agitation, irritability, anxiety.
You're thinking like a drug addict again.
No, what you're saying is
it's the emptiness.
Well, that's what I am.
It's the emptiness and pain that she's talking about that is activated if I see you uncomfortable.
It's you're a projection of his pain.
Let me explain it a different way. I see codependency as somehow empowering and love addiction as somehow much, much deeperly more powerless because you're trying to get love from some other person.
With love addiction?
Yeah.
Whereas, have a way of experiencing love that is intense, and you need some way of people experiencing love that maybe not the other person isn't able to give you.
They're not going to be able to give it to you.
Struggle.
Well, and then you naturally pick unavailable. Like I picked naturally unavailable.
Aren't most people unavailable though?
No. Then you're in denial.
No, there's a whole world out there that's normal, Bob.
What's that?
That's unavailable. I mean, I don't want to get in a marriage.
I'm the love addict of this relationship. How dare you?
No, I don't know. I mean, do you have feelings of separation anxiety, abandonment, those kind of things?
She has abandonment, but no emptiness.
So the abandonment.
I have emptiness and no abandonment.
God, so you're two codependents, perfect for each other.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with it.
I'm just glad you found each other.
30 years or
I mean, you're obviously
25 years.
25 married, well,
we've
35.
Been together for 30.
What does the abandonment look like, Susan?
I mean, I don't need to have him around all the time.
No, when you have abandonment.
I definitely have had that over the years, especially with death and loss when I was younger. I'm a lot better now because I'm more spiritual and I understand that it's, you know, it happens. I'm actually a lot better because I used to have horrible.
I think it came from the incubator
time.
I was very connected with my father, and he lived to 92, and then I've had therapy and stuff like that. And I read about it in college, about the separation anxiety theory or whatever it was. Psychology of...
Does it still pop up?
I don't know if I have a narcissistic personality disorder from it. I'm kind of not... I'm narcissistic, but I didn't end up with a disorder or anything. I had good upbringing.
We'll
and
talk later.
Childhood. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think. I don't know. Drew knows
No,
more.
You don't have a disorder.
Well, there's traits that. And then traits, there's a full-blown traits. Disorder. Right. But
yeah, I mean, I haven't had
codependency. Well, I'm not sure I can make it that simple. I think love addiction is sort of a...
Yeah. So describe Dr. Drew's difference between codependency and love addiction.
I'm not an expert in...
You are an expert. If you're not, then we're all fucking lost.
But you could say codependency is being addicted to people, places, and things. Love addiction is basically you feel empty without other. It's really a connection issue.
But isn't that an unsatisfied... Yeah. You will never be satisfied being a love addict.
Well,
never. It's very satisfying to be codependent.
You get treatment, and then you... Like, I was alone for 4 years, and it was the best thing I ever did. I didn't have anything for 4 years.
Love addicts live in a cloud. They live in a little bit of a
fantasy
delusion,
land.
Fantasy.
Right.
And codependents don't necessarily.
That's a good...
And in a way... Love addiction is sort of a continuum or tributary of codependency.
But there's a lot of why denial. I'm interested in it, because I think a lot nowadays, because love addiction has become such a popular kind of in thing in AA for sure, people are identifying as love addicts, and I don't see that they are. I see them as extremely codependent and justifying that they're getting help by getting a love addiction, which is very abstract, and I don't think they understand what it is.
Always send them to Pia Melody's cycle of love
but
addiction.
She's one of the sickest people in the world.
Pia Melody? You met her?
Who wrote Beyond Codependency?
Yeah, that's Melody Bates.
Oh, okay.
She's got this cycle of love addiction, love avoidance.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what love addicts get stuck into. And it's just sort of a weird cycle. Can't really tolerate closeness in a healthy way.
No.
It's either too intense.
I have that. So you're a love avoidant. Is that what he just said?
If the person is a love addict, I'm a love avoidant.
Right.
If they're love avoidant, I'm a love addict.
Oh.
And that's a classic
yeah,
cycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now I'm not into doing any of that. I'm into autonomy.
You're just straight codependent now.
No. I'm into autonomy. I'm into focusing on myself. I'm into focusing on my own career, my own life.
It all comes from...
I have a boyfriend. We see each other. We're not enmeshed.
Clingy, yeah.
It comes from enmeshment and exploitation.
So you've done work. You've done work so that you can...
Yes, I've read all those books, and I learned to... fill my own emptiness.
That's what I did for 4 years. So even though he relapsed, it was the greatest thing that ever happened because I really got to be with Sherry for the first time.
But your dad, your relationship with your dad, you said it was interesting.
But people fill you. Wait, I want to stop right here. People fill you. My children matter to me. They fill me. That idea that you're just going to fill yourself as this separate entity in the universe is bullshit.
I don't think
there
so.
There are people fill
but,
you.
But I know what you're talking about. But what she was saying is that she couldn't be alone.
Yeah,
in order for her to be alone,
that's a problem.
I understand.
But that we don't need anything or anyone.
No, I wasn't saying that. No, I was saying
that's what
I needed
a lot
to
of
learn.
Saying. Shelley said that.
I needed to learn. It's sort of like I needed to learn that I wasn't going to disintegrate with myself because that's how you feel.
Well, I had to build a self.
Right.
Same idea.
I just don't like when the therapeutic community, whether it's Melody Beattie or this person or that person, writes a book and they show this high ideal that no one lives in. Mm. Instead of, hey, we're all trying to do the best we can. That's why I love AA. We're all trying to do the best we can.
But that's why
one is perfect.
Listen, that's why I like this conversation because we're all being transparent about the fact that we're all just struggling.
I'm codependent and I like it that way, baby.
But Cheri, your dad, relationship with your dad was
my dad was actually. I mean, he was kind of strong and controlling, but I worshipped him. I was more bonded to him. My mother was was unavailable.
Suspect though, there was some denial in your perception of him. That's for some of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I looked up to him like he was 100%.
Oh, I idealized my dad, too.
100%. Yeah. And that's why
I still
honestly, I'm being so transparent, is that I still sometimes have trouble with authority figures.
Yeah.
I kind of put them on.
Oh, you're kidding.
Bob doesn't.
Bob does not.
I love authority.
Bob does not at all. No, like he doesn't.
All he has is authority
problems. I look for authority to challenge.
You mean you
want to
be an authority? Also.
No, I just want to challenge authority.
Oh, you want to challenge? Okay.
It's very challenging.
But I always thought addicts basically have trouble with authority figures.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's
No, he does. He's being facetious.
He has exclusively trouble.
Mine is everything and everything.
Somehow I avoided that strangely. Yeah. I didn't get hit with that.
We have a closeness.
That's
I don't know.
Weird.
How it is.
How did I avoid that? Because I hate being I don't mind being an authority. I don't want to tell anybody.
No,
what
you
to
get
do.
Very authoritative with me about the doctors, the pain management thing.
Yeah.
And I felt myself being a little defensive, but I did read everything he said and I calmed down and I called you back last night and we had a great conversation about it. He wants to demonize the pain management world. I want to demonize Big Pharma. Well, somebody's killing our children. Mm-hmm. Who is it? Mm.
I'm giving you all things.
It's America.
I'm telling you, there's one company to go after for the Suboxone. Telling you, the attorneys had a big role here. I'm telling you, the certain personality styles had a big role here.
Patrick Kennedy mentioned a book. He was just interviewed for the magazine, and he mentioned some book called Dreamland, and it tells something like that.
It's a movie too. It's a documentary.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm saying but it talks about the cycle of how it started with Big Pharma, and you know,
he says it started with pain management.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. So I'm going after him. You're going to see in 2017, 2018 probably, right?
Mm-hmm. Go after the right one.
I know in your heart thing. He's a helping consultant. It's a TV show.
I was
thinking
about you this morning because you yesterday were going, well, Lilly and Merck, they're good, but the little guys, that's biotech. That's the guys that's solving all the
problems.
It's
Purdue Labs, let's just face it. But I don't want to tip too much of my hand of my television
series. Yeah, somebody will steal it.
But I'm going after them. We're having this story meeting about 2 months ago, and I said, because I know what we're about to do, and I didn't think my executive producers and the showrunner knew, John, your friend. Mm-hmm. And I go, if I end up dead, know that I didn't kill myself.
Oh, please.
You're
paranoid now. You're not only antisocial.
You don't think if you're challenging people who are making $30 billion a year in profit, you could end up dead.
Oh, I think you could. No.
Not you, Bob.
I don't know.
Shelly stitched me up when I got stabbed one time.
How are you doing this? Are you going to like a legal
network? Yeah, not a network that has Big Pharma ads on it.
Yeah, but just make sure you get it right.
You're helping a lot.
Get the story right because
it was an management component was there.
Yeah. Pain as the fifth vital sign.
That's ridiculous.
The biggest catastrophe of all.
Well, how could they even think that?
It was 15 years.
You can't measure it.
I gave a talk at Alan Shore's 20th anniversary of the release of his book. Affect Regulation: The Origin of the Self. It was the 20th anniversary of this big book.
It's a dense read.
About 1,200 pages of neurobiology. Yeah. And I put the scale up there and it said, we're being required. That was like 5 years ago. Pain, fifth vital sign. enjoy
it's
that.
It's a crazy
scenario. And I said, all of our patients, our patients, I put the happy faces thing up there. I said, all of ours are down here. That crying, frowny face, that's all of my patients the whole time they're in treatment, right?
Yeah.
Remember the crap we used to take about that?
Yeah.
That was because of pain being the fifth vital sign. We were being accused of undertreating our patients. We had a legal problem because of it.
I understand.
I had to go absorb all that shit.
But
you weren't even into those conversations.
It's so unscientific in a medical scientific environment to say something that can't be measured.
It's a bigger – well, that was how they got their way. Because it became, who are you to say?
Yep.
They say they're in pain.
Oh, and then they didn't have to pay.
But you can take somebody's temperature and you can do their blood pressure.
It's long and involved. Watch Bob's documentary.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to go to break.
And I'll be dead in a ditch.
We're going to go to extendo break. You have a good time, Sherry?
Oh, I'm having the best time.
Shelly, you have a good time?
Absolutely.
It's good to see you.
Every time.
It goes way too long in between.
Well, call me up.
She's down the block.
Where is this house that I have to go visit?
Right down Figueroa, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not far from here, right?
No, it's not far. It's like 15 minutes.
Highland Park, Echo Park,
yeah,
that area?
Exactly.
You live way up in the hills. It's a joke. But we all live
it's
in some
she's
version
in
of a hill.
She's the part.
I'm a pioneer.
By Mark Maron.
It's an old joke. Dwight Yoakam and I were kind of homeless together, and then he became Dwight Yoakam. So
you guys were never really homeless.
Well, uh-oh. We did our laundry at the 7-Eleven on Cahuenga.
When you didn't have a girlfriend, which was hardly ever.
Did you guys know each other like way back?
Oh, way back.
Oh. They were,
so anyway.
There was a group of using.
Yeah, so but Dwight, who was a non-user, never did anything. Dwight.
Who's he hanging with you for? Why did you hang with him, more importantly?
Because he was a punk rock cowboy guy.
Yeah.
He was in my circle.
That off.
So years later, his guitar player is producing one of my records, and he comes by and he's telling me where. I said, "Where have you been? I haven't seen you in years." And he goes, "Oh, I live up off of Barham." And I was like, "I live up there." And he goes, "No, no, Bobby. I live way up off Barham."
Like Mulholland.
That's like, that's the degree of rock and roll, whatever, success. Right.
All
so
right.
Drew lives way up in the hills. We're all in the foothills.
I live in the foothills. I live in an up and coming neighborhood. That's why
I love that area.
I live in the valley.
You live in the valley?
Because I'm a valley girl.
My starter home was in Encino, north of the freeway. That's where your daughter should move.
The starter home. Perfect.
Starter home. Yeah,
no, I live in Calabasas, but I live very close to Malibu. I live off the canyon.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah, I love
off Canaan?
Off of Las Virgenes.
Las Virgenes. Oh. I drive there every week.
It's a really great place to live.
All right, you guys, we've got to wrap this thing up, right?
Love it. See you later,
thank
kids.
You. See you next time.
Bye. Lovers do. You got a dark and twisted place inside of you, and I'm gonna get through, and I'm gonna get through. I will never forget your face, I will never forget this place, I will never forget your taste, I will never forget your. Walls blue.